I'm Susan.
And I'm Carol. Welcome to Kickapoo Nightlife, where we explore all things related to the natural night. We'll learn about astronomy, what plants and animals do at night, the pros and cons of different types of lighting, and the exciting new developments in lighting choices that give us the light we need and the natural dark nights that all life depends on for health and normal function.
We'll visit with people from around Wisconsin and other places about all this and more. Today, we're looking at a significant threat to normal nights on Earth, and we'll be checking in on swifts, a family of birds that live all over the world, and we're going to find out what they do at night. Stay tuned.
Our program today is sponsored to you by Starlight. Starlight, star bright, first star I see tonight. I wish I may, I wish I might, have this wish I wish tonight. Susan, if you see a star tonight, what will be your wish?
Well, I think my wish would be that all the stars I can't see anymore would come back. I'd wish for the bright starry skies that I used to see. That's what I'd wish for.
Me too.
Well, we can wish and we can also work for that. We have a calendar of events now for the month of June, and that's when spring begins to turn into summer. And every plant and animal is busy now raising young and making seeds and growing, and humans are busier than ever now planting gardens and fields, and we're resuming summer activities that bring us back outside to join the rest of the world under the blue daytime sky and the gentle, dark, starry night sky. We do have some indoor activities, too. The monthly Kickapoo Valley Dark Sky Initiative Board of Directors meeting is Monday, June 1st. That's today, folks, at 7 p.m. For a Zoom link to join this meeting, contact info@4darkskies.org. That's info@4darkskies.org. The monthly Wisconsin Dark Skies meeting is the third Wednesday of the month, June 17th, at 6:30 p.m. For a Zoom link to join that meeting and find out what's going on statewide about conserving dark skies, contact wisconsin@darkskies.org. Frog walks continue on Tuesday evenings beginning at sunset. Meet at the gate on the south end of the old 131 trail in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. This is an informal walk. You're invited to walk alone or join others along the ponds and fields at the south end of old 131 trail to observe frogs and any other creatures out and about at twilight.
The phenology report for June. Butterfly weed and swamp milkweed are beginning to flower. If you find milkweed, you are likely to find monarch butterflies. Pale purple coneflower, stinging nettle, and chicory are blooming. Peonies, irises, and daylilies are bright spots in our gardens, showing off their colorful blooms. Common wood nymph butterflies and hobomock skippers emerge. Apple and pear trees have significant fruit development, with cherries reaching post-bloom stage. June is a peak time for bees, with surveys often tracking threatened species like rusty patch bumblebee. Watch for these little guys. They need our protection. Rough grouse chicks are hatching. Northern pike may be seen spawning. Luna moths are attracted to lights, so make sure you turn off your exterior lights or use 1800 Kelvin LED lights so their nightly activities are not disrupted. June brings warm temperatures with highs potentially in the 90 degrees Fahrenheit, accompanied by high humidity. Watch out for ticks. Because of global warming, the Lone Star tick is now calling Wisconsin home. Deer ticks and wood ticks, longtime Wisconsin residents, are waiting to visit you in lawns and wooded areas.
Oh, boy.
If you're near water, listen for the twang of a loose banjo string. This is the sound of the green frog. And if you hear the sound of horses' hoofs trotting over cobblestone street, that's the mink frog. Bluebirds are nesting for the second time this year. Good work, moms and dads. The female tundra swan, called a pen, lays an average of 4 eggs, which hatch in late June. Did you know that the weather can affect how many eggs she lays? Prairie grasses like side oaks grama and Indian grass add color to the prairie this time of year. Sit on the banks of the wetland and let the dragonflies dart past you at top speeds. In Wisconsin, many dragonfly nymphs change into adults this time of year. The wood violet, Wisconsin's state flower, is purple and small. Look for the blooms in wet woodland and meadow areas and alongside roads. If you are in central Wisconsin and in the northwest sandy oak savannas and pine barrens, the lupine is in bloom, so watch for the adult Karner blue butterflies to emerge out of their cocoon-like chrysalis and feed on the nectar. Purple loosestrife is in bloom. This beautiful, invasive purple flower is taking over wetlands and choking out native species. If you see it, enjoy it for a few moments and then pull it out. It's the right thing to do for our native flora and fauna. Dark skies bring out fireflies. Marsh marigolds and yellow lotus are in bloom in the wetlands. The beauty and delight of early summer.
Yes, it's one of the best months of the year. June is just the best.
It is. Yeah. It's a lusty month. Yeah.
And I think maybe our next program we'll touch again on fireflies, because they're one of our favorite topics. So because they'll be starting to come out later in June and into July, and so we'll try to bring you a little special something about fireflies.
I can't wait to see them.
I can't either. You are listening to WDRT 91.9 FM. In Viroqua, Wisconsin. Well, Carol, there's some new information about relatives of our chimney swifts, and I'd like to share that. I ran across this in one of the journals I read, and I thought it was just one of those things that we had no idea was going on in nature, and it just makes me wonder how much else is out there that we see a bird flying or an animal doing something, and we think we know about their lives, but there is so much more going on that's really amazing. So this is about swifts, and we have chimney swifts here, and nighthawks, and rarely now, there's still a few whippoorwills here and there, but they have relatives, several species of swifts that live in Europe, and they have been studied for over 10 years now. One species in Europe is the red-necked nightjar. It breeds in southern Europe, and it winters in West Africa. So it has quite a long migration route. I don't think we're really aware of how far it is from Greece and Italy and Spain and those places into Western Africa, but it's quite a long migration. And these birds are interesting because they live by moonlight, literally. These years of studying them taught us that the nightjar's search for food is completely controlled by moonlight. When the moon is full, they hunt most of the night. When the moon is dark, they only hunt for a few minutes at dawn and dusk, and they conserve their energy the rest of the night by holding still and lowering their body temperature all during the dark part of the night. They can't navigate in darkness, and they cannot search for food in bright light. They have a very narrow range of conditions for sustaining their lives that is regulated and stimulated by the degree of light and the type of light given off by the moon. Other types of light don't do it. The moon also regulates their breeding and chick rearing. They lay their eggs, and so the chicks hatch when the moon is bright and the parents can hunt at night for insects to feed the chicks. They time their migrations to do that really strenuous flight when there's moonlight, and again, they're able to hunt while they fly and sustain themselves on that long flight. So artificial light is a concern for these birds because the bright lights destruct? Yes, it does destruct it. It disrupts it and it destructs it. It destructs their ability. We'll leave it at that. To function in the range of natural twilight and moonlight that they've been designed to work in. Because they can't find food for large periods of time in the dark of the moon, they have little margin for survival if bright light disrupts the time they need to eat and the time they need to rest. When the moon is full, another species called black swifts fly to over 13,000 feet. And again, we don't really know how high they do go. We know some have been measured to fly that high. They may be finding food at different altitudes as they go up. And then they make long downward glides from the high altitudes. And the scientists suspect that may be when they actually rest, is when they just put their wings out and float slowly down. And then they fly back up again. If there's an eclipse, the birds instantly drop to a lower altitude when the moon goes dark. So they're very sensitive to that moonlight, and there's something about it that draws them upward, and when it's gone, they drop back down. Researchers mentioned this was reminiscent to them of the vertical movements that zooplankton make in the ocean in response to moonlight. And we've known for many years that there's just this huge layer of life in the ocean that's thousands of feet down in the dark, and it rises every night, but it changes its patterns depending on the moonlight. Swifts, many species of swifts, live in the air, and they spend more time aloft than even albatross and other water birds that we know can spend weeks or even sometimes months at sea and never touch land. We've thought that maybe some of these birds stayed aloft a long time since the 1950s, which is, that's a long time ago now. That's 75 years ago that we've been suspecting they did this. But now we've put these little tracking sensors on that don't hurt the birds, very lightweight little sensors, and track them, and found that what they do is even more amazing than what we guessed they might be doing. Common swifts stay aloft for at least 10 months at a time. I just imagine a bird not landing for 10 months.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine. They have ways to rest, and mainly it's resting is the thing, but they rest no matter what on the wing.
Yeah. So they're sleeping at the wheel?
Yeah. they're sleeping on the wing. Let's give them credit for that. They're not bad drivers at all. But they've been tracked for that long in the air, and they just come to ground to lay their eggs, and once their chicks are fledged, they're back in the air. Alpine swifts may almost never land. And some of the species of swifts that lay two clutches of eggs in a nesting season will spend less time in the air because they have to spend more time on the ground feeding two batches of baby birds. But the ones that raise only one batch of chicks are the ones that will be in the air for 10 months or more at a time. Some of these birds can live 20 or more years. An old bird that has lived in the air that much of its life has flown the equivalent of 7 round trips to the moon.
Wow.
I don't know. We don't have much sense of how far that is either, but I think that's a lot of airtime. They might be less vulnerable to predators and live so long because when they spend so much time at high altitudes, they're not exposed to the parasites that birds on the ground and in flocks are exposed to being in contact with each other. And they're not as vulnerable to predators either because at 13,000 feet, there's probably not a lot of other birds up there hunting for them. So they spend a lot of time out of the reach of all kinds of problems other birds have. When I think about just those few facts that these birds live in the air and that whether they're high or low, whether they eat or don't eat, whether they lay an egg or not, is regulated by the moon, it makes me wonder about what else we don't know about. What about the weather that we're having now with the climate disruption that's causing storms to be different, more severe storms and maybe more frequent? And these birds are flying in parts of the sky that these clouds are in. You know, when you get up above 5,000 feet, you're in thunderstorm country.
Yes.
And so is that affecting their ability to survive and do what they need to do up there? And then I wonder about the light pollution, too. You know, it was mentioned that that's a concern because it disrupts the bird's ability to sense the type of light they need at night. And we know their populations are rapidly declining all over the world. So these kinds of things, there's just so much we don't know.
Right.
You know, about what they need and why they need it. And meanwhile, we keep changing everything out there. So, yeah, there's some questions we probably should take more look at. You know, the research we do is by necessity, a narrow and brief look at the world. We have a question and we look at it, but we don't see anything else when we're looking at that. So we only know a small amount of information about how life works for these birds. And that brings me to feel like maybe it would be good if, when we can, we leave nature to work as designed and we take some time to learn better ways to understand and interact with what's also our life support system. It's not just making the birds have a better life, but we need things to work too with the moon and the stars. So gives us something to think about and, well, something to appreciate too with this amazing story of birds that live by the moon.
Absolutely. It's fascinating. Susan, there are two new threats to our dark sky that have been on my radar. There are plans by several private companies to deploy giant reflective satellites in low Earth orbit, which leading scientists know will disrupt our sleep, the ecosystem, and food production on a global scale.
Yep, this is big. This is big.
It is. SpaceX wants to launch 1 million. Yes, you heard it right. 1 million additional satellites to create an orbiting AI computing network. While California-based Reflect Orbital is working to use satellite-mounted mirrors to, on demand, redirect sunlight onto areas of the Earth with brightness adjustable from that of full moon to the sunshine at noon. The primary objective is to allow solar farms to keep charging at night, with a secondary objective for use in emergencies during nighttime disaster responses. Ah, a humanitarian objective.
Yes, that is not anything that we need to put much faith in, I don't think.
How generous.
Yeah.
Four international sleep and circadian rhythm societies that represent 2,500 researchers from over 30 countries are requesting the United States government to launch a full environmental review into these proposals. They are convinced that a bright night sky will disrupt biological clocks that regulate sleep and hormone secretion in humans and animals, migration of birds and nocturnal species, seasonal cycles in plants, and the rhythms of marine phytoplankton that are the underpinning of the ocean food webs. Currently, there are over 12,000 existing satellites, of which 88% are in low Earth orbit, brightening the sky by about 10%. Of those, 7,500 are owned by SpaceX. Do the math. If 12,000 satellites brighten the sky by 10%, how much is the night sky brightened by 1 million satellites? We'll give you the answer to compare to your arithmetic at the end of this discussion. In another decade, the brightness will be way beyond the level astronomers have set for preserving our natural darkness. I am just amazed that we are even having this discussion. My question is, what are these companies thinking?
Well, they're thinking about profit and control of resources, and they're not thinking about us, and they're not thinking about the future. So we kind of know the answer, and it's not a good one.
It is not. We're talking about 24/7 daytime.
Well, and being controlled by entities that no one knows who they are or where they are, and they can turn these satellites on and off at will. Once they're up there and working, they will be used however they want to use them, and no one will be able to do anything about it.
Yes, we have no power and control of outer space.
These things seem like fantasies to a lot of people, but these developments are happening very quickly in the last few years, and these plans are realistic designs they've been working on for a while. This is not the first we've heard about, this giant array that Elon Musk is trying to shoot into the sky, and the mirrors the other company is making to shine light everywhere on Earth as they think it's needed. The disruption, I mean, any of us can imagine what that could be like if you want to think about it for a few minutes. So it's pretty important to be aware of this and pay attention and think about your place in the scheme of things in dealing with it as this it gets developed, because they're developing it right now.
Oh, you betcha.
It's in process.
Oh, it's in process. And they're saying that this is going to happen within the next 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years. And it is one way of getting around our ability to have some power and control over the data centers. You know, state regulations are a ways off. Some states are trying to implement, including Wisconsin, some state controls over the development and the building of data centers. What Elon Musk is proposing is to move the data centers to space, where we have no control over them.
No, and he's the only one that does.
And he will be the only one who does.
Yeah.
I am scared out of my wits related to this, because our health and well-being is tied to the dark sky. Whether we really have a tuple, you know, an idea, if we have a true understanding of the importance of dark skies to us for our health and well-being. You know, there's a lot of scientific data, et cetera, out there, but we kind of take the dark sky for granted and aren't thinking necessarily about the role that it plays in our health and well-being and in our daily lives. And to lose that is a real threat.
Well, it is one of the, maybe several, but is one of these threats that if night is disrupted enough, it will affect the survivability of life on Earth, because day-night cycles are fundamental to life on Earth. It runs all the other systems. So if you eliminate that, you will threaten the possibility of life on Earth as we know it. So we just want that to be in people's awareness, because the news is not making a whole lot of information available right now. So we think you should know about it and think about what we can do to have a better world without those things.
It's real. It's real. Well, here's the answer. The answer to the math challenge is 833.33%. In another decade, there will no longer be a dark sky. Think about it. If these satellites are launched, the sky will brighten by 833.33%.
Now we do have dark skies, so we're going to encourage you all to become familiar with the night again, enjoy the night as we have it, and learn about it, appreciate it, and let it work for you, for your health, and how you feel good about the world, and how you enjoy the world. So get out there in the summer and enjoy the night. Learn about the night.
That wraps up our program for today. We hope you've enjoyed visiting with us. We'll be back in July with more explorations of life after dark in the Kickapoo. I'm Carol.
And I'm Susan. Remember, turn off the lights, go outside, and enjoy the summer nights and frogs and fireflies and all the beautiful colors in the sky at twilight. See you out there.